from Los Angeles, California. This is the Writer Strike Chronicles podcast, and I'm Tanya Barnes. Hello, everybody. Today is Friday, January 11th, 2008, day 68 of the Writer's Strike. Today, we're going to hear an excerpt from a panel discussion for the Strike TV Adventures in New Media seminar held at the Writers Guild Theater in Beverly Hills last Wednesday. Featured in this episode is Kent Nichols, the co-creator of the smash hit Ask a Ninja, and writer Tom Smuts, who in addition to having written for Law & Order, Eyes, and Close to Home, is co-founder of the Berkman Center for the Internet and Society at Harvard Law School. Let's roll sound.
I'm going to, prevent people from throwing chairs at some points, but I was going to just sort of start it off with Kent, because Kent's business, he's the co-creator, co-everything of Ask a Ninja, which is incredibly hot, incredibly popular, and maybe you could share with us, how you've made this work.
It's about 2 years exactly to the day that when we got featured on iTunes, November of 2005, we were at our professional and personal nadirs. My mom wanted me to get a real job, and we'd been working on this ninja-based script about ninjas living in Orange County, California, it was with kind of the premise of. Everyone has a latent desire to become ninjas, but ninjas really just want to become regular people. And so, and it was animated, and it was fun, and it was a great 100-page script that had 18 episodes, for the internet. And the problem was that we couldn't animate or draw, and that was kind of a hindering factor. back in January of 2005, I conned my parents into investing $10,000, and my grandpa, we literally sold the farm, and I got a little money from that too. So I was able to live for 2005 and kind of try to produce this animated thing that just didn't work. And my writing partner, Douglas Sarine, kept saying to me, "Isn't there just a way we can do this for free with just the two of us?" And I was like, "No, there is not," because the script was very ambitious, and people were getting killed in the kitchen and at the design studios and everywhere, blood, in a hilarious way. But we couldn't do it. But then we're at this lowest point. It was right before Thanksgiving. And I said, "Okay, here's what we'll do. I'll open up a Gmail account. We'll pick a ninja that that's right in the middle of our organization. That's neither the best ninja nor the worst, but just a ninja. And we will open up questions to the world to that." And so I was involved in a small social network, and I just said, "Hey, if you have questions for a ninja, ask them." And we got several, and we were so. So our rules were thus. It was we looked at places like homestarrunner.com and the Strong Bad emails and other places, and we just gave ourselves permission to only be as good as their first episodes and not worry about being amazing or knowing the whole character. Because if you look at The Simpsons, the first season, all of the characters are squiggly and don't look right, and the voices aren't fully cemented in yet, and so if The Simpsons, one of the best shows ever, it could be completely different and awkward when they started out. Why couldn't just a couple of guys be as awkward and not know as much? So we're okay, great. We don't have to be amazing. We just have to be okay, and we have to be consistent. And then the other rules were So we learned our lessons from the animated thing and other projects of doing stuff for no money with large groups of people quickly is not only financially taxing, but emotionally draining on you. And so the rules were, what can two people do with all of the resources at hand, which were namely a broken camcorder, two crappy apartments, and two people with an old laptop? What can that do to make a show? And the answer was, someone can sit in that chair and we can answer questions. And so I stole the editing style from VH1's, the I Love the 80s, I Love the 90s, Best Week Ever, where they don't have any coverage. They just shoot with one camera, and then they, to fake coverage, they zoom in and then they turn it. And I was like, great, we'll do that. And because our first episode, we shot with two camera angles, and I was like, look, I'm gonna quit if I have to keep doing two camera angles. It's too much work. And so I was like, okay, we're just gonna do one camera angle, all right? And so then we're just trying to make it faster. And like, literally, it was so, we knew so little about the show when we started. When Douglas came over, he looked at me and he was like, so who's going to be the ninja? And I was like, well, there's some black clothes on my bed. Why don't you go put them on? You know, he's like, we're going to trade, right? I was like, sure, absolutely. And I was like, no, we're not. So that's how it happened. And we shot like a couple episodes, like in 45 minutes. Like, we were very cavalier about the first shoot. Very cavalier about the second shoot. And then, so by January, so that was in November of 2005. And then in January 2006, I said, okay, I'm going to register AskAninja.com. I'm going to start a free blog on Blogspot. And I'm going to submit the podcast feed to iTunes like anyone can do. And so I get the email. Like, so I go to bed January 7th crying and masturbating and, just totally alone. And, I drive down to Orange County to do my laundry and get food for my mother again. And that night I get an email from the automated email saying, hey, you've been accepted to iTunes directory. And then right after that saying, we would like to feature you on iTunes, but you do not have a logo. We can only feature podcasts with logos. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I freaked out. I knew this was huge. And so my mother was like, you need to calm down. If you get in an accident driving back, it's not going to, nothing's going to get featured then. And I was like, all right, you're right. So I just was trying to just breathe out. And then I created the logo, and like, that's still the same logo we use, basically the thinking thing. And we were featured that Wednesday. We went from having 5 subscribers on that Sunday night to like having 12,000 by the end of the week. And then we also, like, just to show everyone that we could keep doing it, we released like 3 episodes that week when we were featured, just to show, hey, we're here, baby. And like, and Doug's like, well, now we're out of episodes. I was like, I know, we have to keep shooting, you know. And so it was really that consistency that allowed us to kind of like just grow. And like, you know, that sort of consistency is going to allow you to be discovered and rediscovered by several people. Like, a lot of people will have one viral smash hit, and then they'll just peter out because like they weren't expecting it and they weren't built to do it again. And if you need a big crew to realize your vision, which is, there's nothing wrong with that, but you should at least plan to shoot 4, 5, or 6 episodes when you have that crew together. And and then so over time we've experimented with advertising and we've been really happy with Federated Media over the last year with our ad format, where we've got kind of an integrated pre-roll into the title sequence, and then we've got a mid-roll towards the end with like additional jokes afterwards, and we sell DVDs and T-shirts and all that sort of stuff. And
can I just ask, because I represent like the ignorant person up here, so how do you make your money mostly? Is it from the ads or from the?
Yeah, we make probably 80 to 90% of from ads right now. We gross, and this is before agents and everyone, but we gross 100,000. I know, it's crazy.
Seriously?
Oh yeah. Oh
agents,
yeah.
Agents commission your advertising revenue?
Oh, absolutely. I had a UTA negotiate that deal. Okay. Because I didn't want the sweaty guys in suits to be like, hey, when are you gonna have a TV deal? I wanted them to be going like, well, this internet thing. All right, that's making some money. So yeah, so like UTA gets commissions on all of it. I don't think not so much on the merchandise, but definitely on the advertising front.
And how much traffic? Sorry, no, how much traffic do you have? Like, how big is your audience?
We get about like 2.5 to 3 million video views a month from our servers, and then we get over 1 million page views. So like, and all of that gets like high value cost per mil CPM advertising.
And in the world of internet video, that's very successful. That's 3 million views a month for one video is big.
Absolutely, and we're weekly-ish, so we do 40 a year. Pardon me. And so yeah, some companies that are dedicated to produce like 10 or 20 shows are getting like 4 million a month. And so, you know, us getting that with just one show is, yeah. And basically we beat the demographics on Adult Swim. So like Adult Swim will put out there, hey, we had, you know, 100,000, you know, 18 to 34 year olds watch our show, like an average show per week. And it's like, oh, we're beating you in your demographic, and we're two idiots in an apartment. And so, you know, so you just know that those ad dollars are going to flow more and more and more towards this. Because, like, essentially, like having your own website right now allows you or anyone to create their own basic cable channel. And you don't have to worry about negotiating how many households you're going to be in, because you're in every household that has broadband cable.
And just one last question. When did you reach sort of critical mass where advertisers came to you and like you made a deal with Federated, where you really had that scale?
We signed that deal in January of 2007, and you know, we started experimenting in like the summer of 2006.
And what was your audience size when you made that deal?
Like Federated, like we didn't have spectacular metrics on that, and Federated was hoping to get 1 million a month, and then when we shifted over to their server, we were already getting 2 million, and they were like, "Well, that's amazing," you know. And so we've grown, you know, nicely since then.
Cool. This is fantastic. You know, Tom over here has worked a lot in internet development and trying to get things off the ground. Could you address a little bit what the differences are between doing what Kent's done, which is own his own thing totally, and a more traditional base coming out of the studio, coming out of an existing corporate structure?
Well, so the caveat is I don't really know what studios have done on the internet. They haven't really created a model that's about talent. It's about the rest of their business. They've done little things on the side. But in the big picture, it seems that the internet is an opportunity to go back to what, from a TV point of view, was kind of the heyday of TV from an ownership point of view, which was pre-financial syndication, when there were distribution channels and the price of getting on them wasn't giving up all meaningful ownership. That world, you know, died in, I think, 1992 was when the rules ended. I was working at Fox when those rules started to really be phased out. I was in the room once when, I think, I forget what show it was. It was on ABC, and they were sort of a marginal show, and Fox produced it. And ABC basically demanded to own a piece of the show in order to give it another season. And they didn't demand 50% of the show like they all do now, but they demanded, they basically said, you want to keep being broadcast on ABC, give us some of the show. And now that was between two big studios, which from our point of view isn't really about talent. But as an example, that was a time when you could be Stephen Bochco or R.C. Werner. There were viable companies that made enough money to actually build production entities that were sustainable and scalable and could invest in high quality content. So, like, interestingly, you know, Kent is doing for himself what studios do. I mean, he's built distribution. He has a super efficient way through Federated Media to sell to a lot of different advertisers at scale. He outsourced the product side of it. You told me like the DVDs and T-shirts are done by an independent company. That's what Disney does. Disney just brings it under one roof. I don't know who does your legal for you.
I'm not going to say in this room.
But yeah, I think I want to say something broad, like about the idea of talent owned. I mean, obviously there's going to be trade-offs between, you know, money and ownership. That's whether it comes to the internet or anything. You know, you're all free to be poets, and you will own it completely, and you won't make any money. So, you know, you're free to do that. You know, the price of freedom sometimes, but not in all cases. You're a great example of people who are going to build an asset without giving up ownership. But in most cases, if you don't grow like that, you're going to need more capital up front, and you're going to have to make some kind of arrangement for that capital and for the resources that surround that capital. That's an extraordinary case. What Ask a Ninja?
Right, but like we raised like $50,000 in friends and family capital. Like, so not only from my mother, but then like anyone else who had a mortgage. So like, but like what you can start doing is like applying what independent film is and like independent film financing, like, and bring that into television. And like, that's what I want to see more and more of, as opposed to, you know, faceless corporation owning, you know, massive chunk. You can at least know hey, it's my buddy, you know.
Yeah,
like,
and we'll see. I mean, we'll see when Ask a Ninja makes a TV deal, or I don't know if anyone in the room knows what the details of the Quarter Life deal was, and that, as far as I know, was not a huge internet sensation, but it is an example of a self-financed, relative to network TV, low-budget production that began on the internet first, built an exclusive, for a very short window, distribution relationship with MySpace, and then licensed itself to NBC as a second window. It's conceivable, either for that deal or for other deals, that they got significantly better terms for on that licensing fee than they otherwise might get on that show. And it's also conceivable that they can retain digital rights on that property so that, let's say that show goes 13 and out because 3 million people watch it on NBC, a total failure. But maybe they've tripled their internet audience to a scale where they can actually invest in producing, continuing to produce that show on an internet scale. And that show can live on their channel, on their distribution model for a long time. And I think those things are shifting around. And that's an example of where if you can use the internet to build audience because it's an open distribution system, then you can actually start changing the terms of your relationship with money, studios, et cetera. How exactly is going to be determined by a lot of fights.
Right. And I'd like to jump in just briefly.
You have been listening to the Writer Strike Chronicles podcast. For more information, visit our blog at wgastrike2007.blogspot.com.